Here we go. Okay, so here's the pasuk. I'm going to share with you a remez in the pasuk. Ve'im dal hu. This is the offering of a poor metzora. So a metzora has to bring offerings. What happens if he's too poor to afford these animals? And his means are not sufficient. Im dal hu ve'en yado maseget ve'lakach keves echad. So then he shall take one male lamb as a guilt offering. And 1/10 ephah of fine flour mixed with oil for a meal offering and a log of oil. That's what he brings. Instead of two unblemished male lambs and one unblemished ewe and all this other expensive stuff, there is, if he's too poor, so it says two things. In dalhu, if he's dal, if he's poor, ve'en yado maseges, and his means are not sufficient, he can't afford it. What are those two things? It is also interesting when we find the concept, and I don't know if we'll spend so much time on this, but it's just something to consider. The idea that if you're poor, you can pay less. We don't really have, for example, if a person steals, robs a bank, but he spent a lot of the money, before they caught him, he spent a lot of the money, he bought a hospital for his mother in the Bahamas because she was sick, you know, and he needed the money, right? So he had to rob the bank. So do we allow him to owe less money? Halacha wouldn't allow that. Halacha would say, if you stole something, you owe the money. If you can't pay for it, we'll sell you. If that still isn't enough, you still owe the money. If you were to later inherit a lot of money, your first item of business would be to pay back someone else's money that you took away. Lifroa, which is the word to pay back, also means to open up and to reveal. And chov, which means an obligation, is also the word, the shorash chov is chavui, which means hidden. The true nature of money is that it belongs to the person who it's truly owned by. But if I happen to be holding on to that money, then where is that money? Well, it really belongs to him. I have a debt to him. But that's completely hidden to the naked eye in this world. Piraon, when you pay something back, what you're doing is you're pralo beis hashkita, you're opening up, right? You're opening up something that was otherwise hidden to the naked eye, and you're making the reality available. If this person really owes a korban, so why don't we say let him pay what he can now? And later, when he has more, he'll pay back more. That's the incentive question. In other words, why here do we uniquely find, you say, well, listen, if you can't really afford it, so you'll pay less, and that'll be enough. And you achieve the full kapara, and you... It's tough to understand exactly why that's so. If you really need those animals, you should have to wait for those animals. The spiritual thing should be achieved only by the same means as everyone else. Okay. So there's what to think about. I don't say that it's like a burning question that should make someone not be able to turn the page in the Torah, but it really is something that should make us stop and pause. Okay. But I want to share with you something in the world of Remez first. This is a sefer called Dan Yadin from Rabbi Eliezer Papo. He's more famous for some of his other sorim, like Pele Yoetz is one of the ones that's very, very popular. But this is a sefer on Chumash. One of his drushes that he gave very often, he'll take a pasuk and read something into it that has nothing to do with the pasuk. Or at least apparently has nothing to do with the pasuk, and makes no attempt to reconcile it with the pasuk. It's just remez. So he does that here. He says the following. There's a gemara in Yuma 23. Kol hama'avir al midosav. Any person who forgoes what he deserves, his midos, meaning really he deserves to be told thank you, please, to be treated with respect. And someone disrespects him. Someone disrespects him. And he lets it go. Ma'avirin lo al kol psha'av. In heaven, they forgive him all his sins. All his sins.
No matter what they are?
People have done some pretty bad stuff. Gemara seems to say no matter what they are.
I don't know.
There are some sins that cannot be forgiven by heaven without a person doing tshuva. So, for example, if a person doesn't ask forgiveness, sins ben al mechadera, so the heavenly part cannot be fully, you can't fully be forgiven even by heaven until you ask mechila, when you get forgiveness from the friend, etc. But I guess it would mean whatever heaven can forgive, when a person does something that great as letting things go. It's very strange. Why is that so great? Hiya. So he says this. He says, there is no greater solution to achieve kapara than to keep one's mouth shut when one has been insulted. You see, normally we understand that there's two ways to do tshuva. There are two ways that if a person needs kapara, that they can go about doing that. One way is torturing oneself. Tzom. Fast. Right? There's always prayer. But aside from prayer, right? Tshuva, tefillah, tzedakah, say on the sitter, says tzom kol mamon. Fasting. People would roll around in the snow. People would fast. Deprive themselves as a way to achieve kapara.
From people? Like Jewish people?
Yes. Yes. This is in Gemaras, and this is something that was, you know. So there's fasting. Very great. People often fasted for weeks at a time, you know, only eating at night, fasting in the day. Yeah, sorry.
So I think this day I know someone would fast twice a week.
Mondays and Thursdays. It's not uncommon, even today, for great people to do. It's an interesting thing, right? In other words, depriving themselves from physical pleasure. So that's fasting. We'll have to figure out. We don't really do that. Not only that, for most people to do that now would be a terrible, terrible mistake. Because even if you look at Mesillas Yesharim, it's a somewhat exalted level, which is still in the middle. The even higher level would be not to do that. And the lower level would also be, because it would be very destructive. A person who's not ready for it, I'll explain that maybe in a moment, what I mean by this. But there is physical suffering, Yisurin Memarkin, when a person suffers physically and emotionally, that wipes away some of sins. And when a person gives tzedakah, tshuva, tefillah, and tzedakah, giving charity, literally taking out our checkbook and writing away money, so that's also something that brings kapara. It's interesting, damim, the word damim means blood in the Torah, and it also means money in the Torah. It means things that relate very, very much to who we are. The money that a person earns and works hard for, and he turns around and gives that away, so it's a tremendous sacrifice. And when a person fasts, so if you look, even in the Siddurim, if a person is accepting a fast for the next day, so then he accepts it at mincha the day before. And also there's a prayer that people say, may it be your will, Hashem, that miut chelbi v'dami, the losing of some of my fat and blood, should be as if I offered a korban with fat and blood on the mizbeach. So these are hard concepts. I mean, I want to talk about them in a moment. But those are two things that you could do to achieve kapara. There's something even better. What's even better? Keeping your mouth shut when you're insulted. If you can do that, then you don't need the other ones. So he says like this. Here's how you could read the pasuk. Im dalhu. He quotes a pasuk in Shmuel where dal means weak, physically weak. Im dalhu, let's say the person's physically weak. So they want to do tshuva, but they're not going to be able to roll around in the snow. They're not going to be able to fast. They're not physically up to that sort of thing. I want you to know something. If you will be more grumpy with your wife and kids, then don't deprive yourself. They need a cheerful spouse. That even includes things, you know, you'd be surprised, but oh, I forgot to turn the ringer again. That even includes a person who stays up another hour to do chesed, drive someone to the airport, or to learn Torah. If to the people that you have a responsibility for, you'll be more grumpy, and you'll be, so it may be that that level of deprivation, even that minor one, is not the right thing to do, because in that, right, these are always, life is all about these kind of balances. How much do I do for others, and how much do I do for my family? But a person who doesn't have the ability to suffer anymore can't do it. Ve'en yado masegas, or if he doesn't have the money to build orphanages, can give some charity. But he doesn't have the money to really do much. How much can he give already? So what should he do? V'lokach keves. So we're talking about a poor mitzora should take a keves. You take a little lamb. So he says keves is the letters kaf, bet, and shin, which mean lichbosh. Kovesh means to conquer something. Ezehu gibor, it says in Pirkei Avot, who is called strong? Hakovesh es yitzra. Someone who can conquer his desires. Kovesh is to conquer something completely, to completely consume something. It also relates, by the way, it relates interestingly to the word koves, which is to wash something, to soak something completely in water. So it's completely consumed. It says that a man is supposed to be kovesh his wife so that she not be a yatz onis, so that she not have the need to run out on him. She shouldn't have to always go out. She should be able to be comfortable in her home because he has conquered. He has conquered her. So some of the first sentence, kovesh is not a word that necessarily means to conquer somebody against their will. It means to completely consume somebody with so much love and so much attention and so much, healthy soaking that they have no need to go anywhere else because they have everything they need. That is a tremendous principle. There's nothing you need to run away from home for. Children. Orthodoxy in general. If we create a world where there's all this really, really exciting stuff just over the border, and the only thing we can really do is threaten. The internet is fabulous, and the movies are fabulous, and everything is wonderful out there. Here's the problem. If you do that, I'll kick you out of my house, and out of my school, and out of the community, and you'll be shunned. Right? Unfortunately, there are many, many people who build a world view like that for their family. That's a big problem. The conquering has to be one of soaking instead of keepers of listening. It's I have what I need here emotionally. I'm so enchanted. So it's true. Sometimes something can be a little bit tempting, but it's certainly not worth leaving the cocoon. So he says, "Lokach kevet." A person can take upon himself to control himself, to shut his mouth when he's suffering. You know, Moshe Cordovero says. And then I'll go back to explain a little bit, because this is an important principle about limiting ourselves by physical things and how much we should be doing. And Rav Moshe Cordovero says the following. Rav Moshe Cordovero was one of the rabbis of the Arizal. The Arizal spoke at his funeral. We have a transcript of what he said. So Rav Moshe Cordovero taught the following. But first I'll tell you how the Chida uses it. It's a Mishnah Pirkei Avos. All my life I grew up among the wise people. I never found anything as fabulous for your body as being quiet. There's nothing as good for your body as keeping quiet. So what's so good about keeping quiet? For your body. You can understand for your soul. Based on what we just learned, it's a very spiritually and uplifting thing to keep yourself quiet. So the first thing is the Bartanura says it needs to keep quiet when you've been insulted or when there's a fight. Big thing. Sometimes you have, a Jewish organization, a community where a couple of rabbis are at each other's throats. Good principle. You probably don't go to heaven for bad-mouthing rabbis. Probably not. Like, bad-mouthing tzaddikim. That's probably not the way to go to heaven. So I know Reb Shach said what he did about Lubavitcher Rebbe. And I know Shmuel Zaydeh said what he did about Reb Nachman of Breslov. And it said, and the Vilna Gaon said what he, right? Like, these are cryptic and challenging times in Jewish history to understand. But by picking that side and being vocal about it, it's hard to... Keeping your mouth shut when there's a fight and kind of waiting to see. But I can do the closing door. Becoming Antarctica. So that's the way to make terrible mistakes. Keeping your mouth shut. So in a fight, when you've been insulted, when you have the need to speak up, that's the Bartanura. Now, okay. So the first thing I want to tell you is, why is it good for the body? Before we explain the Moshe Cordovero and the Chida's explanation and tie it back into what we've been saying, I'll tell you something very, very interesting. Why is it good for your body to keep quiet? There's a Gemara in Nedarim, which says, Kol HaKoes. I've taught this before. Let's have a little different take on it this time. Anyone who gets really, really angry, consistently, an angry person who spends their life in anger, so Kol Mine Gehenim Sholtim Bo. All forms of hell rule over that person. The low ode, but that's not all. Not only do they suffer in all forms of hell, Not only that, something even worse. So what could even be worse, right? What could even be worse than that? So this is a Gemara, Tachtonio Shultis, where they suffer from hemorrhoids. This is a real Gemara. What kind of a thing is that? What's the bit? If anybody in the world, in their right mind, had an awareness of heaven and hell, and decided that not only is hell horrible, but also hemorrhoids, it's just unbelievably, it's almost a funny thing, right? So, there's different ways to understand that Gemara. But for today, we'll explain the following. Ask a person who's a really angry person. How's your life going for you? Just physically. Don't talk to me about anything spiritual. Mitzvahs, aveiros. How are your relationships going? How is your job working out? Do you get along with your employees, your employer? How is your ride to work in the morning? If someone cuts you off, how do you manage? Is your blood boiling the whole time? Do you not, right? You have a throbbing heart. There's a big problem here. You're not healthy. Physically, you get hemorrhoids. Not, in other words, it would be enough if we were talking about how much suffering it is. Hemorrhoids are not worse. But here's what we're saying. The Gemara is saying it's really, really unthinkable to not learn to control our tempers. Because not only do we go to hell, so spiritually there's an enormous incentive to get this under control. Physically, it ruins your life. So what'd you do it for? You have a guy who says, I didn't keep kosher. So God says, why not? Didn't you know that it's a mitzvah? He says, I knew. But I was traveling. It was so convenient. So many different food options. Wine, I didn't have to worry only about kosher wines. I could go to wineries. I could travel Italy. I could. That's an answer. You should have favored physical. Sorry, you should not have favored the physical over the spiritual. But at least you have some brain in your head. But what if a person spent his time, you understand, eating raw sewage that was technically non-kosher? What are you doing that for? What are you doing that for? There's no lama, there's no lama zeh. The person who gets angry is completely crazy because not only does he go to Gehenna, he also gets hemorrhoids. There's no benefit ever in his life to being angry. It's the ultimate. So the Gemara says, there's a pasuk, Rasha kegova apo bal yidrosh. Ein Elokim kol mizimosav. Rasha, the wicked man, at the height of his anger, bal yidrosh, he fails to inquire. Ein Elokim kol mizimosav. That there is no God is the totality of his thoughts. If you could sum up what that person is thinking, that enraged person, it's really that there's no God. He's completely given up at that moment on some level. Very, very interesting. Nothing matters to him anymore. Well, that makes sense. If his heaven doesn't matter to him, and even his life here, the quality of his life doesn't matter, he's willing to fight with his spouse over something. Why? Well, it's my pride. I have to be. Why? Wouldn't you rather have a good life? So this tells us that one of the most basic steps to learning to control anger is to truly consider this. Not only spiritually is it a big problem, practically it's just so stupid. If you can get a handle on this, you can have better. You can have everything better. There's never an advantage to flying off the handle. If you think it's the right thing to do, the best possible thing would be to be completely and totally in control and to pretend that you're angry. If it's really necessary that there be anger. But there's never an advantage to actually being angry. Okay. So that's the beginning of it. To really, really get close and to understanding. Just like the alcoholic has to learn to understand there was no advantage for me to be an alcoholic. And that's a little harder. Because if he could really manage to just drink in moderation, there'd be a huge advantage. He'd have a little l'chaim and he'd feel great. So it really would be great. So that's anger. So it's good for the body, you understand? Keeping quiet and learning to just keep things inside are just good for your body. They're good for your physical life. You'll have a more physically pleasant life if you'll be married, if you'll be welcome in people's homes, if you'll, you understand? Like, it's just going to be much better for you. You're getting less fights, less people will beat you up. But there's another thing. Based on what we said, we just said that when a person gets really, really angry, sorry, when a person is insulted and doesn't say anything, he keeps the feelings inside. And he allows himself not to just react off the handle, and he accepts the insult. When a person does that, it forgives an enormous amount of things. that would otherwise require physical suffering. Fasting would cost him a lot of money. Yeah? So says the Chida, that since Rav Moshe Cordovero teaches us that when a person is insulted, massive amounts of their sins are wiped away in a way that would otherwise require years of fasting, thousands of fasts, and other physical suffering. You hear this? There's nothing better for your body than silence. Because otherwise your body would have to take the brunt of this physical suffering. Because otherwise how are you going to get kapara? There's nothing better for your body than being quiet.
Is this just with relation to anger? Or what about like other kinds?
Not just anger. Like, insult. It's more insult.
Like not responding to insult?
Right. Now when somebody says something to you that's really hurtful and really cruel, and you don't respond, you accept it. You accept that suffering. It's agonizing. You want to speak up. You want to say, hey, what did I ever do to deserve that? The other day, right, we just, Hashem had a little baby boy, and we're in the, so I run out, after finally things are settled, and so I get to room, so I'm like 11 o'clock at night, I run out to, you know, from Los Angeles, down Los, it's not so bad from Cedars to Pico, try to find some food for her, you know, that's not cafeteria food from that, right? So I come into the place, and I order, like, something that won't even need to be cooked, like a salad, or like a, you know, I wanted to get back before I knew this restaurant I was in. And I see it ready on the counter for a minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, and they're just not passing it to me. So I go to the person I ordered from and say, hey, like, I understand you guys are really busy. Like, I think I see it on the counter. Would you be able to just pass me that? So the guy working behind the counter, like, overhears me asking this and just says to me, like, really sharply, like, I was totally not ready for this. But like, hey, buddy. Come on, there's other people waiting too. What's your problem? We're doing our best over here. You know, like, totally out of left field. Like, and this is in a crowded place. I mean, this is, everybody in the room turns around to see who's this idiot who's like telling them that they have to have his order ready right away. So like, there's really two options and very tempting to turn to the guy and say, hey, like, I was speaking nicely. I was asking respectfully. I wasn't saying you're less of a good man. Just, right? In other words, like, or you could just accept it and keep your mouth shut. So without telling you what I did, you know, what I wish I would have done is kept my mouth completely shut and not said a thing. Because that's what it says in the Gemara. Achieves tremendous greatness. There's another Gemara that says, Tola Eretz al Blima. This has nothing to do with Milton and Esther's daughter. Tola Eretz al Blima. God hangs the earth on nothingness. Nothingness. On emptiness. Yeah, you wanted to ask something? I don't want
to. Well, I just feel like sometimes you have to speak up, sometimes you have to say something, because I used to have an issue about anti-Semitism going on across campus. Like,
wow.
It's not anti-Semitism, so I feel like sometimes you have to speak up.
Yes, we'll get to that. That's a very good question.
Yeah.
I'm not advocating women staying in abusive relationships or something, right? I mean, there is a way that we have to handle disagreement, and no question about it. So I'll try to cover that. If I don't answer that, remind me, but Tola Eretz Ablima, God hangs the earth on nothingness. One of the most remarkable pasuk in Eov says this. You know? In other words, it's just an absolutely remarkable thing to think about that no human being can ever truly grasp. Like, where does the world exist? I mean, in infinite? Then what's on the other side? You have said, where's the end of the earth? It's expanding constantly. Okay, what's it expanding into? So people can use very complicated jargon to try to convince you that you're just stupid and scientifically ignorant, but that they really understand it. They don't understand it. Making sense of how the finite and the infinite go together are something that human beings cannot make sense of. The earth hangs in the middle of nowhere. Yeah, but what's on the other side? But what's on the other? The universe is an unbelievable mystery. It's mind-bogglingly brilliant. It's great. God's greatness is enormous. So says the Gemara, Tola Eretz al Blima, Hashem hangs the earth on Blima. That also could mean closing up. Bolem es piv. If during an argument, or a disagreement, one person seals up their mouth, blima, sealing, then that person keeps the entire world going. More impressive than God being capable of creating a world that hangs in the middle of space. Like, what and what is the human being's ability, who's in the image of God, of course, to keep himself completely silent completely silent. It's an unbelievable strength to not stand up for yourself like that and just let it go. And that tremendous strength is so spiritually beneficial. I once heard Rabbi Victor Miller speaking about this topic. So he said, imagine if you walked into a room and somebody took a slingshot and took a 18-carat diamond, shot it at your face. Boom, you feel a cut on your cheek. What do? Bend down and pick it up. Put it in your pocket. And hope that it keeps shooting. Because you might get a few cuts and bruises. You'll buy a lot of Neosporin with those diamonds. You can live the rest of your life with a couple of bruises and $20, $30 million. If you understood the spiritual benefit of being insulted and not responding, you would wait for the next time somebody would say something to you. Because it refines your soul in such a way. It's like somebody throwing diamonds at you. You just pick them up. Let me try to explain further. You know, we said before that in a relationship, so you got to keep your mouth shut sometimes. So you say, but aren't there times you got to really speak up? On campus. We're talking about, the Gemara says, b'shas meriva. A person who keeps their mouth shut at a time when it would be completely useless anyway to answer. If one person in a relationship says something to the other one that's really hurtful, if they have a healthy relationship, then the next day, or once things have calmed down, that person who was hurt can respond and say, listen. And there is a methodology to doing this as well, where you don't impugn the person's self-esteem and etc. But you make it clear, you say, listen, that really hurt me. And you probably didn't mean it, and I'm sure you were just angry or whatever it was, but like that can't really happen again. And you can say it in a very strong way if that's important. But it has to be done in a way of complete calmness and complete understand. As long as we're reacting instead of acting. So it's permissible. If somebody says you're a jerk, it's permissible to say, no, you're the jerk. You're allowed to do that. But if a person just keep their mouth shut and accept it, is enormous. I had someone contact me this week. Very interesting person. Her daughter, maybe in her 30s or something, has not spoken to her in years. And like the only way she has to contact her is like an email address, which she occasionally will respond to when she emails her. You know, like very, it's a very heart-wrenching kind of thing. Now, I don't know all the backstory and I don't know any of the things, but this girl basically will tell her mother, you abused me, you did this to me, you did that to me. And I said, what are you talking about? I paid your way through grad school and I did this and I did, right? And that's how the conversations will go. So I was talking to the mother about finding a good friend who she can confide in, who can reassure her that she wasn't abusive and that she's not done any of those things. And then, at the same time, to be contacting that daughter and letting her know, everything you said is right and I want to make amends. You know, I've been in denial and I'd like to go back and make amends. And I'm just going to keep my mouth shut and accept what you're saying and try to do my best to go forward. She says, why on earth would I do that? I said, because it seems, from what you're describing to me, and again, I haven't spoken to your daughter, and it could be I'm way off, you know, but from what you're describing, it seems to me that even you would agree the only possible way for you to have a healthy relationship with your daughter is to stop and really listen to what she's saying and just accept it for the moment. Internally, you need to have the strength to know you're not a bad person. You'll have to be an actress. But you've got to keep your mouth shut and listen. When she says, you did this to me, don't say, oh yeah, but I did so many nice things. And what kind of a person treats their mother like that? And what? That's all true. And it's right. My grandma Frida used to say, or tell, teach my mother the poem, here lies the body of William J., who died defending his right of way. He was right, dead right, as he sped along. And he's just as dead as if he'd been wrong. That was the poem. The ability to shatter our pride, to hear somebody say something strong, and negative and just accept it is a massively spiritual experience. There is a Gemara which says when someone comes to convert, Gemara says when someone comes to convert to Judaism, here's what you do. First thing you tell them is, I-ati-yadei. Do you not know that the Jewish people nowadays are terribly mistreated? They're beaten. They're sickly. They have all kinds of suffering, one after another, that comes upon them. If that person replies and says, I know that, and I don't deserve the privilege to suffer along with them, then we accept that person right away as a candidate. That doesn't mean they've converted yet. Then we teach them some of the mitzvahs, and we get them to the point where they can dunk in the mikvah, but it's a quick process. That was the Talmudic methodology. You can skip almost everything if you can recognize the value deeply of what it means to be suffering for the right thing, to be prepared to accept whatever it takes. In the book of Ruth, there's this unbelievable thing in chapter 1, in the book of Ruth. Listen to what happens. Ruth is left with her mother-in-law and her sister-in-law. So there's Orpah and Ruth, who are daughters-in-law of Naomi. They married her Jewish sons, but they weren't Jewish, causing, it seems, according to Naomi, her sons to die for that sin of betrayal of the Jewish people, whatever. And they... Now she's left without her husband, who was a multi-millionaire, one of the wealthiest Jews. They left impoverished, with two Moabite daughters-in-law who are sort of attracted to her charismatic personality, even though she's an immigrant in their country. I mean, just imagine a woman like from the Ukraine or something, from Russia, coming to Los Angeles with two boys. Her husband dies. Her two boys, you know, whatever they go to, right? They go to the local day school. They marry a couple girls, and they both die. No kids. Now, these girls have all their friends. They have their parents. They have their community. And they have this immigrant mother-in-law who's not really related to them anymore, and she's going back to her country. She's leaving Moab and going back to Israel, right? She's going back to the Ukraine and our Marshall. And they're like, we're coming with you. We're coming with. We're not leaving. And she has to convince them not to come. So she wants to explain to them why it's not worth coming. She says, don't bother coming. Because you should find husbands. You'll never find husbands in Israel. Jewish men are not going to want you. Let's say I had a kid. I'm much too old to have kids. And even then, let's say tonight, she says, I were to find a man and conceive children, and you would wait 13 years until they're adults, and you would each marry him. Who says I even want them to marry you? I'm your best hope. I love you guys. I don't know if I want you for my kids. You killed my first ones. It sounds like the rantings of a delusional person. And what if I found a man? Ah, so then 13 years, let's count this up. Maybe you could No, I don't know if I want that. What kind of talk is this? What she succeeded in doing is made Ruth feel that nobody really, this is not going to be good for you. Community-wise, it's not going to make it any better. Physically, your life's not going to be any better. And so what we discovered is the next pasuk says she saw that Ruth was resolute in coming with her, so she stopped trying to dissuade her. Fabulous. If you're willing to suffer for what you believe in, if you're willing to go into this, don't come converting here because you want to marry somebody. It's going to be harder for you to get married if you convert to Judaism. You don't have the family background. You don't have the knowledge. You don't have... It's going to be much harder for you. It's going to be harder for you to find your place in the shul. You're not going to know where things are. You'll have a much easier life if you don't come this direction. That is something a person has to deeply understand. The amount of people who don't understand that, just about, is the same amount of people who cannot keep up after their conversion. So you find many people who soon after say, oh, I was disillusioned. I thought the community would be so warm and so inviting. You know, I also hope it will be. And we try to be people that are very warm and inviting in our community, and we try to create... But at the end of the day, it's not going to be easier than it was before. It's going to be easier had you not converted. And that's what Ruth understood in a deep way. She says, no, it's worth it for me. Wherever you die, I'll die there. Wherever you live, I'll go. Wherever you sleep, I'll sleep. You sleep on the floor of a concentration camp, I'll be next to you. Doesn't matter. I would rather Rebbitzin Esther Jungreis was a little girl in Bergen-Belsen wiping human ash off of her face. Standing holding her father's hand, Nazi guard came over, spit in her father's face. He was a great rabbi with a long white beard, and ripped big part of his beard off of his face. It was bleeding. She stood there, and he was on the ground. She stood there next to her father, looking up at this Nazi guard. She tells this old lady, that at that moment, she thought to herself, I'm so proud that this one is my father and not this one. Even a small child can understand this. It is worth suffering when a person can keep their mouth shut because internally they have the knowledge. Doesn't matter. Let the dogs bark, but the caravan must move on. You understand? One of the true heroes in my life was a great person who many, many years ago was, I don't know him so well, but I know, he was terribly maligned, terribly. Things that were not true. He never responded. It doesn't really help to respond. When you say, oh, it's not true. There is a story, even. This story goes way back. This is a really good one. About a fellow named Rabbi Wolf Zhitomer. Zhitomer is the city that he was from. Rabbi Zev Wolf Zhitomer. So he was an early, early Hasidic master. There's a story with him. Rabbi Baruch of Meshmitz, another one of the early Rebbes, who's much more well-known. We don't know that they ever really interacted, but there's one fabulous story that we know. A few years after Rabbi Wolf Zhitomer died, Rabbi Baruch of Meshmitz came to visit the city of Zhitomer. And he made a shidduch. One of his children, he established a shidduch with someone in the community, a family in the community, in Zhitomer. No one could believe that one of the greatest rabbis of the generation had made a shidduch with that family, because there was a very, very troubling story about the father that he had made a shidduch with. So in other words, he was marrying, his child was going to marry into a family where the father had, in the past, it sounds like it was some sexual infidelity that was like a terrible, terrible story, and he was tarred and feathered and run out of town. And no one could believe that now he had come around and he's making a shidduch with the Gadol HaDor, one of the greatest rabbis around. And nothing had been done yet. They had agreed to marry the children together, but they hadn't yet shaken hands on it, nor had they made a party. But Rabbi Baruch of Meshmitz wouldn't back down. He was very troubled. A whole delegation of people came to him and said, you might want to reconsider because this person's really a bad guy. And he said no, because he said, when I met him and he told me shalom, I immediately felt just this incredible intuition, divine sense, that this is the right person to make a shidduch with. I just knew it. I can't believe they would be misleading me from heaven. So he refused to break the shidduch. He followed his intuition. It's very interesting. You know, all these stories are not... often there's a little broken telephone and there are different details, but sometimes it's just right, even if it didn't exactly happen that way. It's very important sometimes to follow. If you have a strong sense that what you're doing is right, you know, you have to hold on to that a little bit. So listen to what happened. Before he left, he went to visit the Tzadekes Almanas HaRav Rav Wolf Zhitomer. What happened is he went to visit Rav Wolf Zhitomer's widow. Rav Wolf had died, but there was a great rabbi's late. Yeah, so his wife was still alive. He went to visit. So the moment that he came out of the house, came across the doorstep of the house, she came running towards him. And she said, come with me and look out this window. And he stood at the front window. She said, it was years ago we were standing at this window overlooking the street. Me and my holy husband, the blessed memory, when they were chasing this man through the street. Men, women, children, catcalling him, insulting him, chasing him down the street. And my husband, Rabbi Baruch of Meshmitz, said, that man, he didn't do it. He didn't do it. Sorry, Rav Wolf Zhitomer, I said it wrong. Yeah, Rav Wolf Zhitomer had said to his wife, that man didn't do it. He said, and I believe that because of that incredible insult, Bishar Zos Habusha Yizke Shetzadik Amiti, Echad Migadoli Hador Yiyah Mechutana, one of his children is going to do a fabulous shidduch with one of the greatest rabbis of the generation, and you'll see, when you see that happen, you'll know that I was right about this, that he was completely clean of all sin here. So she said, "Now I know that you're also indeed a very great man. Now I can see." It's a backwards logic, right? I mean, now I know you're obviously a great person because they're doing a shidduch with you, so you must truly be one of the tzaddikim. That was the story. And he was simcha gedola b'lei kol shama. The people that heard this were very, very overjoyed because they could understand now the incredible benefit that this fellow had achieved when, look, there was nothing he could do anyway. But he'd experienced tremendous humiliation. It's a massive kapara. In our lives, there's no end of opportunities to just keep your mouth shut a little bit longer. Somebody says something, and the huge benefit is that it's good for your body. Meaning it's good physically. Good for your heart rate. Guf tov, there's nothing better for your body than silence, it says in Pirkei Avos. Nothing better. It's better for your life. It's better for your relationships. It's better for everything. Okay. Now, there's a sefer called Shomer Emunim. The Rav Ara L'Chassidim. Rav Ara L'Chassidim. You know in Me'ah Sharim? So there's Rav Ara L'Roth was the Chassidish Rebbe. And they are the followers of... So they wear like the striped, okay, like the pajama-like robes. They're Rav Ara L'Chassidim. So in the Sefer Shomer Emunah, he says the following. A person who's willing to accept insult and suffering because of how much he loves Hashem, talks about how unbelievably beneficial it is. V'da. Know this. When a person is put into pain by other people, like by a friend who hits him or insults him, or the person attacks his livelihood, trumps up some things, takes him to Beis Din, and when he realizes it can't be fought effectively, he's not going to be able to get his money back. He just accepts it with love and faith in Hashem. Madrigaso gavoa bezeb b'chinav v'nes ala yikar. The kutsha brichu le'elu le'elu. He has an unbelievable spiritual level. Kol shekinim adam etzari de nachri. He says it's even more so if the person is humiliated by a Gentile. It's one thing if it's a fellow Jew in your community. It's your brother. It's your cousin. You know, in that case, there is a benefit to keeping your mouth shut. You don't want to pick one side in a fight, right? You might have to just let it go. Here it's a Gentile. Somebody from out the outside. He says, Miskaprim b'zeh avonosef b'yeser se'es. When you walk down the street, when you walk through the campus and someone says, filthy Jew, and you just swallow it, it forgives, it wipes away sin at an enormous clip. Very high level. He says that person's pain goes up to heaven. That person's pain is witnessed by Hashem. Hashem does not let go of even one hit, one insult, one thing. These people will pay. How do you like that? The incredible benefit to your neshama of being able to handle it. It requires a tremendous strength of character. It will require you knowing who you are in a very real way inside and being proud of who you are and not worried about what people think, which is an enormous achievement. It will allow you to have the tools to really make rational and careful decisions. And spiritually, it's just huge. It's the biggest thing you could do. Now, just to explain also what we said before, we talked about depriving oneself physically. That there is apparently some sort of spiritual benefit to fasting, to doing these things. When is that the case and when is it not? So there's something we see in the Torah from the Nazir. This is Gemara and Nazir describes the following. It says, the Nazir, the person who decides he's not going to drink wine and other physical pleasure, he limits himself from physical pleasure. So a Nazir has to bring a korban, a sin offering, whenever he finishes Nazirus, no matter what. So the Gemara says, why? So Rabbi Elazar HaKapar says that it's a punishment. Because he withheld himself from enjoying this world, he's a sinner. But there's another Gemara that says that a Nazir is called Kadosh. He's called holy. Pasuk really says that. So which is it? Is it holiness or is it a sin? Well, he says it depends. If a person made it through his entire Nazir time and he managed not to mess up, so he became a Nazir and he didn't accidentally drink wine and he didn't accidentally go into the cemetery or whatever else, so then he's fine. He's holy. But if along the way he accidentally messed up, then the whole time he was sinning. What does it mean? If you're at the level where it will not interrupt what you're trying to do in this world, for you to limit your physical pleasures, it won't interrupt your interactions with other people. It won't interrupt the way that you make a difference in the community and the way you make a difference with your family and the way you study Torah. Then it's a fabulous idea. But sometimes you have a guy, like Rav Huttner used to joke, about the fellow who decides, I'm not going to eat any red meat during the week, only on Shabbos, because Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, I don't need that much pleasure, right? He says, then he sits down to study Torah in the afternoon for a few hours in Yeshiva, and the whole time he's thinking about a steak, a hamburger, and he thinks to himself, boy, I'm giving up so much, I really want one, and I'm doing this only for Hashem. And he spends an hour of the time he's supposed to be learning daydreaming about a steak. So it'd be such a big mitzvah if he would go just eat the steak and study Torah for an hour. His priorities are upside down. So the balance, you're only holy when you limit yourself from something, when it makes you holier, when you can live up to it and you can do it comfortably within your lifestyle. But if it doesn't fit into your lifestyle in a very healthy way, it would be much better to eat the ice cream and make a bracha on it and be so grateful for Hashem for giving you yummy things, because He loves you, and go on with your day. That's a very important thing. So it's sort of an aside, but since we mentioned it, that's a very, very basic principle. Any chumrah, any time it's a chumrah, whether it means keeping Chal of Yisrael or any other chumrah, if it's going to make you closer to Hashem reasonably, based on the rest of your lifestyle, then it's good to do. But if it's going to interrupt things too much, then don't do it. If it's one of the mitzvahs, you've got to do it. The moment that it's a chumrah, the moment that it's something above and beyond what the actual letter of the law says you must do, so then it's never wise to do it unless it rationally makes a lot of sense to you. Yeah? And the same thing is true. By limiting ourselves in physical pleasure, it can only be when we really understand. This is what the Gemara says in Nazir to explain the discrepancy between. Okay, suffice to say, and we will end with this, that when a person comes with a korban, when a person cannot manage, the truth is the only thing you're supposed to be doing when you bring a sacrifice, the only thing you're supposed to be doing is sacrificing yourself. That's what the Ramban explains. Really, you should offer yourself on the altar, of course. We have a lot left to do in this life. So we symbolically offer something else while internalizing the fact that I am a servant of Hashem. When a person slaughters his ego and realizes I'm in this life to actually live a life for Hashem, for the world, for bigger things than just myself, that achieves atonement. That's how we atone things. Because we're no longer living for ourselves. Sin is about making a choice of me over what's right. That's always what sin is. I know God said don't eat from the tree, but I know if I eat from it, I'll grow wise and I'll live a long time, so I'll eat from the tree. And all sin is when we favor ourselves over what's really better for ourselves and for the world and for everything else. And so kapara is going to be when we get rid of that selfishness. Then we can get rid of the impact of the sin. So it's offering yourself to Hashem in the form of a sacrifice which brings you close. So now we understand, if a person cannot afford this money or that money, it wasn't that you owed a certain amount of money for the korban at all. What you needed to do is get rid of yourself. Get rid of your ego a little bit. Get rid of that selfishness. Get rid of the part of you that can't respond back. And nowadays, if we don't have a korban, he says the Paleoites here, one solution he's suggesting to us to achieve kapara is to just learn to squash our ego a little bit more. The next time somebody attacks us or hits us, realize we don't get our self-esteem from people. Hashem li lo ira. God is on my side, so I'm not really that scared. Ma yasa li onam. No man can do a thing to me. Only Hashem can. And if something is happening to you, it's also from Hashem. that lesson and that message is so powerful and so important. We can't forget it. We should give it a shot. We should give it a shot. We should wait excitedly for the next time somebody's going to say something to us they shouldn't have said. The next time we're in a restaurant, the next time we're in line, the next time someone cuts us off in traffic and shows us in a glorious way the size of one of their fingers as compared to the rest of them, you know? Like, just be excited. Be excited. Wait for it. And just to conclude that point, and that's the end. Why do I tell you to be waiting for it? Why should you wait? You know, we've said this before. If life is a test, by Rebbetzin Esther Yerbrecht, right? Life is a test. That's a good book she wrote, and it's a very important principle in Torah. Life is a test. We're filled with tests. If you knew, okay, your grandmother came to you in a dream and said, Yael, it's me coming, or my, your great-great-grandmother, right? Coming from the next world to tell you that tomorrow there's going to be a really important test for you. Someone's going to cut you off. And the test is, will you lose your temper? You're not going to lose your temper because you know it's a test. So why did you lose your temper today when the person cut you off? Because you weren't prepared. If you're prepared, if you're expecting, if you're walking through life saying, I know that today there's going to be at least a test or two. Ah, this is it. Okay, I'm going to do it. Right? If you knew you might be on candid camera anytime today, right? You'd be on your toes. You're supposed to be excited about it. You're supposed to be waiting for the next opportunity. When we look at life that way, it's going to be a lot easier. If when you're married, you're looking for the next opportunity. There's going to be a time soon when my spouse is going to be in a bad mood or they're going to say something they shouldn't say. And that's an opportunity for me to be great and go to heaven and achieve unbelievable reward and to pick up diamonds along the way. I can't wait for one. And when it happens, we're less likely to fire back. So we got to be excited. We got to look forward. That is all we have to say. Thank you.